More details on the website, rte.ie/Mooney. Now listen to this sound. That's the rising and falling continuous churring of the nightjar. Nightjars are one of the most enigmatic species, and they're rarely seen due to their nocturnal habits. They're also known as the goat sucker, as it was believed that it sucked the milk of cows and goats. It was once so widely known in Ireland that people gave it the name, Aina?
Turning Lean, because it sounded just like a spinning wheel, and Turning Lean is a spinning wheel.
A spinning wheel. However, numbers completing the journey to Ireland from African wintering grounds each summer have fallen dramatically in recent decades. This is thought to be related to habitat loss and a decrease in large insects due to the use of pesticides. However, John Lusby, conservation officer at Birdwatch Ireland, is here to tell us that its forgotten and fabled call was heard again recently. John, you're very welcome to the programme. Tell us all about the nightjar. Where was it heard? Was it you or somebody else who heard it?
So I must credit it was a friend and colleague of mine, Alan Mee, who you know well, who's been on the show many times.
Yes, Dr. Alan Mee. Yeah,
that's right indeed, that spearheaded the Whitetail Eagle Reintroduction Project, but obviously changed his focus last summer. So we carried out a survey actually in the south of the country, two upland areas, the Galtees and the Knockmeal Downs, and we had quite an extensive survey there because that was actually the last place that nightjars have been recorded in Ireland. But we unfortunately didn't find any nightjars there, but Alan carried out some additional survey work in the Ballyhoras, which is an upland area just on the Cork-Limerick border, and had that recorded that magical churring sound that you just hear there, which is the first time it has been heard in suitable breeding habitat for quite a few years. So a really, really important discovery, and great to know that that nightjars are still out there.
And is that a mating call the same as the corncrake sound, just emitted by the males looking for women in territory?
Exactly. That's the churring call, is the male typically sitting up on a bare branch or a tree and broadcasting himself, you know, out over suitable habitat, trying to attract a female. And amazing call to listen to. It really, obviously, you know, in the night sky, there's some, you know, really unusual sounds that we hear from breeding birds and also mammals. But this one in particular is really magical.
And is it migratory?
It is, yeah. So they arrive to Ireland typically in May, and then quite a short stint that they spend in Ireland. Then they obviously breed here, the ones that do stay here, and then they leave again in September, and they return to their African wintering grounds. So it's only quite a short spell that they actually spend in Ireland, and obviously much fewer now would migrate from Africa to Ireland than we once had back on a few decades ago.
John, the nightjar has been declining in many European countries right back into the 19th century. But an interesting observation, in 68 to 72, they were at an all-time low, but there was a bit of a recovery in Britain. The numbers actually increased substantially, relatively speaking. Do you think there's the hope that will spread here?
Very possibly, and I think that was one of the reasons that we wanted to carry out the survey the summer just gone, was just because of that. And I think with nightjars, they're definitely a bird that can go under the radar, and they're a bird that people aren't really accustomed or used to hearing, but they're also one that, you know, they're quite cryptic. During the day, they essentially just disappear. They blend into their background. They'll be tucked away either on the ground or, you know, camouflaged against the branch or the trunk of a tree. So it's only for a short period at dusk and then at dawn that they actually, you know, make their presence known, and that they emit that wonderful magical churring call. But it's also they only inhabit quite remote areas, so they are a bird that, unless we're actually actively going out and searching for them, they're very likely to be under-recorded. So obviously the last summer we did record that nightjar are still present in Ireland, but even prior to that there was the general consensus was that they could actually completely disappeared from Ireland and that they no longer bred here. So we did find them in the Ballyhowers last summer, but we don't know what other areas they occur and how widespread they might be. So it is a really interesting one. And just as you said, Richard, the population in the UK has been doing quite well over the last few years. So there's nothing to say that population increase in the UK might influence, you know, an increase in numbers here in Ireland.
Are they ground nesting birds or are they in trees?
No, they're ground nesting, and they've got really cryptic kind of mottled plumage that really camouflages them to the ground. So they typically nest on the ground in leaf litter, and the main nesting habitat now in Ireland would be in young forest plantations. So essentially non-native conifer plantation that either would be clear felled and then the young forest is growing up again, or young plantations. So they would nest on the ground in young plantation like that.
John, we're used to things being controlled by the sun and daylight, but there is a hint that the nightjar's fortunes are to some extent controlled by moonlight. There was a paper back in the late 90s by Chris Perrins and Christopher Crick, which argued that the nightjar likes to lay on a rising moon. As the moon is getting brighter steadily, that is when they will lay. They're interested in timing the hatching, the young being the maximum food demand and fledging, for when the moon is full. The reason for that, of course, is that they contemplate a second nest. But if the moon is rising too late in the season, they lose out on the second nest. This was the argument of the paper. And so in a year in which there's late rising moon, the nightjar won't do so well. Are there nightjar years?
Well, to answer that, we just don't know, because we know so little about them in the Irish context. But that's a really interesting point that you raised. And it obviously, from an ecological perspective, from the nightjar's perspective, it makes a lot of sense. With all birds, they want to coincide their breeding with when food is most abundant and available, when they're feeding their young. And the behaviour of nightjar, they are obviously nocturnal birds, but they're, you know, to look at them, they're quite an unusual looking bird. But when you see them in action, you can see that they're highly adapted for their purpose, and they've got very, very large eyes and very large gaping mouth, and that is essentially to catch flying insects, moths and the likes on the wing. And their main hunting method would be by sitting on a branch and then silhouetting their prey against the night sky. So you can imagine, you know, in better light conditions, that makes their hunting even easier, and they want that to coincide with when they have to feed hungry mouths in the nest.
So they're competing with bats then in that sense, because they're feeding on flying insects rather than, say, other night birds like owls that feed on mammals on the ground. So as a consequence then, with the reduction in insects due to all of this insecticide business, this is having an impact on their food probably, apart from the moonlight at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the Paul was just on talking about bees, like it's an area that affects, you know, biodiversity across the board in terms of the decline of insects. And with nightjars that would specialise on flying insects at night, you can imagine with a reduction in insect numbers that's obviously going to have a consequence, as it does with many other wildlife, that, you know, insects are a core part of the food chain. So that is one of the threats that has likely brought about a reduction in numbers in nightjar. Also as well, with the changing landscape, and it's interesting because with a lot of birds we would talk about the negative effects of increasing forest cover, of non-native forest cover. I better specify that. But with nightjar and with that, you know, we've talked about the likes of hen harrier and merlin and the negative effects of non-native forests. But with nightjar, it's potentially one that may have benefited, because that's their main nesting habitat, and that's probably linked to their increase in the UK. And it was interesting when we were carrying out the survey last summer in the Galtees and Knockmill Downs, there seems to be a lot of suitable habitat, so kind of, you know, forest cover in the low-lying hills for nightjar. So it would be really interesting to know, you know, just do they occur in other areas, and are they actually on the increase? Obviously we only recorded them in the Ballyhowers, but we just don't know where else they might occur and in what numbers.
So we need citizen scientists then to actually, because I mean, once you hear them, you can't really mix them up with something else. So if you do hear something like a spinning wheel churring along at night in an area where there might be some woodland nearby, all you have to do is all these inevitable mobile phones, take it out and record the thing, and it's a record.
Absolutely, and as you say, it's an unmistakable call. Once you've heard it once, you know you know what it is, and it is a really good one for citizen science, like the other species you mentioned, like long-eared owl, and that would call at night. And because there's so few out there, that any records of nightjar would be absolutely valuable.
Is this goatsucker name, is this just an Irish thing, a name in Ireland, or is this a name given across Europe? The idea that these birds, because they're such big mouths and they're out at night, are probably stealing the milk, like the way hares, I suppose, steal the milk as well, aren't they? From animals, from cows and goats. Or is that an Irish nickname, or is it a European one?
No, it's not just Irish, so it seems to be very widespread, and it's one of the more bizarre ones. I think with a lot of night flying birds, there a lot of them are suspected of witchery, and I think because nocturnal birds, a lot of them have quite strange eerie calls. They're obviously difficult to see, so there's a lot of superstition kind of surrounding them. But definitely with nightjar, it's one of the more bizarre ones, and they have been labelled with the name of goat suckers, and I think it's partly due to their strange appearance. They've got a very, very large mouth, but very, very small actual bill, beak, and as well
like
as
a
that,
swift, nearly.
Exactly, and they're actually they kind of fit in classification terms. They fit in between swifts and owls, and they would bear some resemblance to both, but also very, very unique in their own right in terms of their appearance and behaviour.
Because the Irish word tourneen actually refers to a spinning wheel rather than anything to do with drinking milk out of goats.
Yeah, exactly, and the spinning wheel sound, obviously, linked to their kind of rhythmic hypnotic call.
John, do they hate being on the ground? Anna mentioned swifts there. Well, now, swifts don't like to come to ground. They are forced to do so to lay their eggs and so forth. Now, this nightjar in the autumn will head off and southwards, cross the Mediterranean, cross the Sahara, the Sahel, an enormous journey. But being an insect eater and insects on the wing eater, then this is nothing to it, or should be nothing to it. If it moves from oasis to oasis, it'll get plenty of insects to eat over the water and that sort of thing. So it's not worried about getting exhausted or starving along the way. But it probably needs places to come down and rest, because it's not going to stay flying around during the day. And when it gets to Africa, it's got to come down again. The model for swift is close, but indeed the swift is a distant relative, but still it's different, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And just as you described the swift, they're not well adapted at all for perching, for landing on the ground, and very, very small feet. So they actually have difficulty taking off again if they do find themselves on the ground. Whereas nightjar, it wouldn't be the case, and they would spend a lot of the time on the ground, and during the day, mostly they would be camouflaged on the ground, say among leaf litter on the ground, and they can incredibly good camouflage. They virtually disappear into the background. But they also, in terms of their flight, then it's amazing to watch them. They are incredibly agile flyers. They've got a very kind of erratic, buoyant flight when you see them at dusk, and that's they're changing their trajectory and course as they spot insects on the wing and to catch them in the air. But they are quite strong flyers. So in terms of the migration, they would be well equipped for that, definitely.
Have you ever seen one?
I have, just the glimpses would be, and unfortunately I've not seen them in Ireland, so that's still on my to-do list. So I've seen them in other countries, actually the Netherlands and also in Finland, but the views kind of, because they only become active as the sun is setting, the views are typically limited to a fairly short period during the night when you see them silhouette as they're flying around their territory. And they've also got an amazing display, kind of similar to some of our other nocturnal species, because obviously when they're advertising themselves, it's going to be dark, so they have other audio cues that they make to advertise themselves and their territory. And they've got an amazing wing clapping as well, like some of our other species do, like long-eared owl, where they actually clap their wings above their back and can make quite a loud sound. So that, in addition to the chirring for a short period during the dusk, is it's unmistakable and absolutely magical to hear.
Well, I'd love to hear them as part of the Dawn Chorus this year.
Well, absolutely.
May and June. Would there be Dawn Chorus at the beginning of May? Would they be here at the beginning of May, do you reckon, John?
Yeah, they would. It's kind of from mid-May onwards, really, that they start to arrive, and that then they start to call.
Well, we could be lucky. It's the first week. It's the bank holiday weekend in May this year for the Dawn Chorus, the fifth international Dawn Chorus, and 25 years, as Aina reminded me the other day, of Mooney Goes Wild in May. Can you believe it? 25 years on the air, we're all aging. John, it's great news anyway, so thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Derek. Thanks, Aina and Richard.
Good luck, John.
Bye-bye.
That's pretty much all we have time for today. My thanks to Aina Nilana and Richard Collins, to Jarlath Holland, our broadcast coordinator. Our researcher is John Riley. On sound, we had Tommy O'Sullivan, and our producer is Anna Leddy. Until next week, goodbye.
And Mooney Goes Wild was presented by Derek Mooney.